Thanks, Mustafa. Thank you. Okay, folks, let's return to business here, and please let's take up item 1032.
Appeal of Portsmouth Neighborhood Association against hearing officer's decision to approve the application of Bridge Meadows for a conditional use and adjustment with conditions for New Meadows, a proposed group living facility at 8710 North Dana Avenue, LU15-273480-CUAD.
Okay, we're going to go through a number of procedural announcements here to set the stage for this. Some of you have been at city council meetings before. Welcome. If you want to speak on this item, you'll be given the opportunity to do that. Just let our clerk know. We typically allow 3 minutes for individual testimony. It doesn't look like we'll have any trouble accommodating that today. You need only give your name. You don't need to give us your address. If you're here representing an organization, let us know that. We follow the rules of decorum in this chamber, so if you agree with somebody's testimony and want to show support, give them a thumbs up or a wave of the hand, and a polite hand gesture to the negative is okay if you disagree with them, but we save applause for visiting dignitaries and students, so unless you're one of those, we'd like to keep it nonverbal in terms of the council communication so we can hear what's going on and everybody hears or gets their say. So with that, I'll turn it over to our city attorney for some announcements. I have some procedural steps I need to go through as well.
Okay. This is an on-the-record hearing. That means that you must limit your testimony to the material and issues in the record. We will begin with a staff report by the Bureau of Development Services staff for approximately 10 minutes. Following the staff report, City Council will hear from interested persons in the following order. The appellant will go first, and will have 10 minutes to present his or her case. Following the appellant, persons who support the appeal will go next. Each person will have 3 minutes to speak to council. The principal opponent will have 15 minutes to address City Council and rebut the appellant's presentation. If there is no principal opponent, council will move directly to testimony from persons who oppose the appeal after supporters of the appeal conclude their testimony. After the principal opponent, the council will hear from persons who oppose the appeal. Again, each person will have 3 minutes. And finally, the appellant will have 5 minutes to rebut the presentation of the opponents of the appeal. Council may then close the hearing, deliberate, and take a vote on the appeal. If the vote is a tentative vote, council will set a future date for the adoption of findings and a final vote on the appeal. If council takes a final vote today, that will conclude the matter before the City Council. The scope of testimony. I would like to announce several guidelines for those of you who will be addressing City Council today. So the evidentiary record is closed. Again, this is an on-the-record hearing. This hearing is to decide only if the hearings officer made the correct decision based on the evidence that was presented to it. This means you must limit your remarks to arguments based on the record compiled by the hearings officer. You may refer to evidence that was previously submitted to the hearings officer. You may not submit new evidence today that was not submitted to the hearings officer. If your argument includes new evidence or issues, you may be interrupted in reminding that you must limit your testimony to the record. Council will not consider new information, and it will be rejected by City Council's final decision. Objections to new evidence. If you believe a person who addressed City Council today improperly presented new evidence or presented a legal argument that relies on evidence that is not in the record, you may object to the argument. Objections to new issues. Finally, under state law, only issues that were raised before the hearings officer may be raised in the appeal to City Council. If you believe another person has raised issues today that were not raised before the hearings officer, you may object to council's consideration of that issue. The applicant must identify constitutional challenges to conditions of approval. Additionally, if the applicant fails to raise constitutional or other issues relating to the proposed conditions of approval with enough specificity to allow council to respond, the applicant will be precluded from bringing the action for damages in circuit court. I'll now turn back to you.
Thank you. Those requirements, by the way, are all founded in state law, and so are these questions. So first I need to ask if any members of the council need to declare a conflict of interest. Okay, I hear none. And does anyone on the council wish to report ex parte contacts on this case, information gathered outside of this hearing? Okay, and if anyone wants to challenge those assertions that we have not had ex parte contacts, or have a conflict of interest, this would be the time to do that. Hearing none, then we are going to proceed, and I'll turn it over to Ms. Stokes for a staff report.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor Hales, council members. I'm Kathleen Stokes, the assigned BDS planner for this land use review. We also have Teresa Montalvo for the Assigned Bureau of Transportation Planner in attendance to answer any questions that you may have for her. This proposal is for a project that goes by the name of New Meadows. It's a group living use for 19 residents. The proposed facility would provide housing and counseling services for 14 young adults who are transitioning from the foster care system to an independent adult living. There are up to 4 rooms that would accommodate both a young parent and a child, being one of the young residents with their child. One of the rooms would also house a resident assistant. The program will provide workforce development and educational support and life skills training, and a full-time counselor would also work at the facility. The applicants also requesting, in addition to conditional use approval for the group living use, an approval of an adjustment to reduce the spacing requirement in the code between group living uses, which generally requires them to be 600 feet apart, to reduce that to 185 feet. Bridge Meadows is the applicant for this review, and the Bridge Meadows development, which is an intergenerational project, is located just 185 feet away. The Bridge Meadows site has an approved conditional use with group living facility for up to 52 residents. And that includes, in the intergenerational model, children and foster or adoptive parents of those children, and also surrogate grandparents. And the plan is that these individuals would also have an interactive relationship with the residents of New Meadows. The proposal for New Meadows is, as a group living use, was significantly revised to address concerns of the neighborhood regarding the original design. The revised proposal was approved with conditions by the hearings officer on July 14, 2016. That decision was appealed by Portsmouth Neighborhood Association, mainly based on remaining concerns regarding scale of the development and the reduced distance from another group living use. This, as it has been said, is an on-the-record case, but following the neighborhood appeal, the applicant did extend the final day for a local decision on this case until February 17, 2017. The proposed development, shown in the site plan here, would include a parking area for 5 vehicles, as well as detached accessory structures and an outdoor area and stormwater swale with the main residential facility. The hearings officer decision required the applicant to install L3 landscaping and an architectural split-faced masonry wall along the north property line. The wall had to be 6 feet tall, except for the part near the west property line where it would be reduced in height to provide adequate sight distance at the street edge of the driveway. There was also a condition that required landscaping and a 6-foot tall, fully sight obscuring wood fence to be installed along the east property line for a distance of 45 feet, running from the north property line to the edge of an interior walkway on the site. Now, these are drawings that show the original proposal as it was submitted by the applicant. These renderings were revised in response to the neighborhood concerns, and the applicant actually canceled the originally scheduled hearing in order to meet and work with the Portsmouth Neighborhood Association. The applicants will talk about their participation in those neighborhood meetings and talk more at length about the changes that were made to the design, but the final submittal or the revised proposal is shown here in these street views. The building is now proposed to be 2 stories with multiple entrances and varied roof lines. So looking at the area, the subject site and the surrounding area is zoned single dwelling R5, and approximately 250 feet to the north, there is an R2 low density multi-dwelling residential zone that covers most of the New Columbia housing development. And then a little bit further to the north and to the east is the University Park and also Community Center in the open space zone. Here's an aerial photo that shows the context that I was just speaking about with a New Meadows site there marked in red, a site. It's at the corner of North Dana and Hunt, and it's a half a block approximately northwest of the Bridge Meadows site. The closest nearby uses that aren't in the household living use category are is the residentially zoned Rosa Parks Portland Public School. And then I had already mentioned New Columbia to the northwest, which is residentially zoned and is developed with household living uses. And then the University Park and Charles Jordan Community Center, which are to the north and east of the Rosa Parks School. The following photos that we're going to look at will show the site and the context of the nearby properties and their development. This is the subject site, a photo taken from North Hunt, looking to the north. The site used to be developed with an electrical substation, and we can see some of the remaining perimeter landscaping that was a screen for that substation. The utility pole that you see on the right-hand side and the tire tracks are at the east edge of the property in the public alleyway. There's a close-up of that alleyway. It's 15 feet wide, running from north to south through the block, obviously unimproved. The applicant doesn't at this time propose any changes to the alley, in part because of the need to relocate the utility pole. Here we see the site from North Dana, looking north-northeast. The garage seen in the distance right behind the utility pole serves a home on North Wayland in the next block. That garage is adjacent to the northeast corner of the site, and it's accessed via the alley that we were looking at. The taller buildings that are to the left of the garage are single-dwelling structures that are located on narrow lots fronting onto Wayland to the north and northeast corner of the subject site. The site seen here in this view from south to north contains previously platted lots, narrow lots 25 by 100, that could allow by right the development of up to 6 single-dwelling residences, which would include 4 detached houses, and then on the corner, 2 lots. They're a little bit undersized, but you could still use the provision to have 2 attached units on those 2 lots, making up the 6 possible homes on this property. This view is showing a home on North Dana that abuts the north lot line of the subject site. As was discussed in the hearings officer's decision, the property owner of this property submitted a letter that raised concerns that the New Meadows facility would negatively impact his family's livability. And it was particularly in regards to the proposed location of the parking area, which would be adjacent to his property. This is a home to the east of the site at Hunt and Wayland, abutting the alley with the subject site at the far left of the view. Another view of the same home. It's immediately across the alley to the east of the subject site with the main entrance and garage oriented towards North Hunt Street. And here we have a view, to the west along North Hunt Street. And this is Wayland Avenue looking north from Hunt Street. The photo reflects the predominant character of the area, with a mixture of 1- and 2-story single-dwelling residences. And this is a home that's directly across the site from the site on North Dana. These homes also are on North Dana, and you see homes like this on both Dana and Wayland with the narrow lot development. These skinny homes are constructed on originally platted 2,500-square-foot lots, the same as the platting configuration that's on the subject site. Now, 2 of these homes on the left side of the picture are directly across the street from the proposed New Meadows site, and the other 2 are abutting toward the north and west of the site. This view is showing the south side of Hunt Street. We see part of it on the left-hand side of the picture. There's a dilapidated, overgrown property that's directly across the street from the subject site. And we can also see some of the homes on North Dana Avenue here to the south of the site. On the right-hand side of the photo here, we see that dense vegetation of that property that's dilapidated that surrounds that home. And beyond that, to the east, are taller new homes in the and in the far background, the gold-colored building is one of the Bridge Meadows buildings. We'll finish with a few slides of the Bridge Meadows development here at North Hunt and Wayland. And looking down the street here between Wayland and Foss Avenues. And then last picture of the Bridge Meadows development. So the approval criteria for this review, for the record, are found in Code Sections 33.815.105A through E, conditional uses for institutional and other uses in the R zones. And this is required to meet that approval criteria for the group living use for 19 residents. The adjustment review criteria is found in Code Section 33.805.040A through F. And, of course, the adjustment is to reduce the minimum spacing requirement between group living uses from 600 to 185 feet. The hearings officer found that with conditions of approval, these criteria were met. And I had already actually referenced most of the physical conditions. There was also a condition for an adherence to a set of house rules and a requirement that there be a good faith effort to establish a good neighbor agreement and that there be implementation of safety and crime prevention measures. So at this point, City Council has to decide whether the aspects of the proposal that were previously discussed and the issues and solutions raised by the applicant and those that testified in opposition but they make their decision based on that, new evidence cannot be considered, as has been said previously. Council can approve this appeal and overturn the hearings officer's decision, or deny the appeal and uphold that decision, or you can actually determine that it's appropriate to request further revisions to the proposal that are in keeping with those previously raised issues. That concludes my presentation. Do you have any questions at this time?
I have a question. There's a reference to a crime prevention measures. So what's the context for that condition?
You mean the approval criteria or the...
What is it about this particular facility that requires a crime prevention plan?
It's a standard requirement that the Police Bureau generally makes for these reviews. One of the approval criteria states that the proposal won't have neighborhood impacts on safety. And there's also an approval criteria that states that the city service agencies have found the proposal to be adequate, and it names specifically the Police Bureau. So in light of those approval criteria for these types of reviews, we often get responses from the Police Bureau stating that they want to have an assessment to ascertain that the site will meet crime prevention through design standards, that there be adequate lighting, that there be visible signs showing the address so that emergency responses, vehicles or personnel can find the site. Those sorts of things are sort of standard requirements.
That's helpful. So that goes back to something we talked about, even going back to Tom Potter about crime prevention through environmental design, not who is occupying the premises.
Correct.
That's what I wanted to just make sure I understood.
I have a clarifying question, too, regarding the hearings officer's decision about Condition E, about the good neighbor agreement.
Yes.
So it states that the applicant must develop with the Portland Neighborhood Association representatives of Bridge Meadows a good neighbor agreement, or must document that the New Meadows and Bridge Meadows representatives met in good faith with the Neighborhood Association for the purpose of meeting for one. Do we have an assurance from the Portsmouth Neighborhood Association that they're willing to meet on that issue?
It's my understanding that the Portsmouth Neighborhood Association is willing to meet, but they have part of their appeal statement. They claim that they thought that there should be a requirement for a good neighbor agreement rather than, you know, that it be finalized ahead of time rather than that there just be a requirement that they meet and try to create one. And I can explain that in the past, some neighborhoods and some situations have held up projects by failing to agree to meet or holding projects from being able to go forward based on certain stipulations that they would not compromise on. And so generally over time, Bureau of Development Services staff have worked with softening the phrasing on that type of condition to say you have to at least give it a good effort to try to have an agreement. And so that was the recommendation that went to the hearings officer, and he adopted that language.
And I agree with that because you can't force people to come to an agreement. The concern I have the way the language meets is if the neighborhood association refuses to meet, then that condition cannot be met.
I believe that the condition says that the applicant has made a good faith agreement to meet with the neighborhood.
No, it actually says it must document that they met in good faith with the neighborhood.
Or made an attempt?
No, it doesn't say that.
Actually,
okay. I beg your pardon. I adopted this case after the previous planner retired.
Mr. Frank, the language is met in good faith?
No, this is way down in the weeds, and we can discuss it later. Let's hear the appeal, but I just wanted to feel like that's an issue.
So that is something that we may need to look at modifying that language of that condition.
And I just understand that I'm tracking the issue because I'm interested. Is your concern that it's a standard the applicant can't meet or that it's a standard that the neighborhood can frustrate?
It gives the neighborhood veto power.
And it's the current language is that they have to show they met in good faith.
Right. So I think the language to change it made a good faith effort to meet rather than met.
I agree.
All right, let's flag that for discussion. And obviously, since it's in the record, people can testify on that question if they'd like to. Okay, anything else from Kathleen that we need at this point? Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Let's hear from the Portsmouth Neighborhood Association because you're the appellant. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Donna Robbins, R-O-B-B-I-N-S, and I am appearing today on behalf of the Portsmouth Neighborhood Association, but also on behalf of my neighbors and myself. I do live in the Portsmouth Neighborhood Association. Didn't want you to get me confused with a lawyer or somebody who knows what they're doing. So I'm just going to go through one by one the specific criteria, and I don't know if you have the appeal document in front of you, but I'm just going to give you an explanation of each one of these and the concerns of the Neighborhood Association and the neighbors. So in the approval criteria, 33.815.105, just to highlight this point, this approval criteria allows institutions and other non-household living uses in a residential zone that maintain or do not significantly conflict with the appearance and function of residential areas. So we're appealing based on the first A1 here. The overall residential appearance and function of the area will not be significantly lessened due to the increased proportion of non-household living uses. We do believe it will significantly conflict with the appearance and function, and as you could see from some of the things that were just brought up on the picture, there was a map, there was a zoning, and you can see that this area, this proposed area, is already surrounded by Bridge Meadows, which is a group living facility, Rosa Parks Elementary, which is a non-household use, Charles Jordan Community Center, which is a non-household use, the R2 zoned New Columbia, as well as there's a church that was just off the picture. So there's actually already quite a bit of non-household living uses. We believe it'll be an unreasonable concentration of non-household living uses in the area. There's already several, and at some point we have to say, all right, that's enough, and maybe we can move to a different location to continue to build other non-household living use areas. One moment. In the hearings officer's file or decision, he stated that the group living use will essentially, while not technically under the Portland Zoning Code, constitute a household living use. I disagree with that in noting that the proposal is like a dormitory facility. It's a little bit more like a community service institution, like the institutional use of a community service, where these people are getting treatment. They have a full-time employee there to assist them. They have an RA. This is quite a bit more like an institutional use for community services, except that possibly, not necessarily, the people living there will be there for more than a month. I don't know that that's the case, but it seems to be. So I would like to make a point here that it is a group living use, and it is not close to a household living use. It definitely is that, as the hearings officer tried to make it sound like it maybe isn't. There was also inconsistency we wanted to point out, where the hearings officer talked about the impacts within 400 feet and within 600 feet. I think that within 600 feet would be accurate, but we were confused as to what exactly he was meaning. We think that whole neighborhood area would be affected, everything you saw in that picture and beyond. In A2, the intensity and scale of the proposed use and of existing household living uses, the hearings officer erred procedurally in addressing this condition. And the reason I say that is because primary argument here was about what could be built there, which is also what was just brought up. There could be six houses. It could be divided into that. And while that's true, that's not actually what makes this condition met, is not what's possible and what's being proposed here. We're only look at what's being proposed here. And I believe I'm correct on reading the law that way. So in only looking at what's being proposed here and not a various amount of possibilities of other things that could be, maybe, might be, the scale is not compatible. The proposal is several times larger than any household use in the area. And it is on a bigger lot, which is one thing that I believe the hearings officer noted. But the bigger lots should have several smaller style buildings, just like other bigger lots in the area, or the smaller homes. The style is not compatible. I was pleased that they agreed to meet with us and do a focus group and kind of talk about our concerns. But the main concerns of the people in that focus group were that they wanted individual buildings. They wanted the feel, the characteristics of household living uses, of a neighborhood, of residential. And what they're getting is one giant building. And that concern was not addressed. Instead, they changed the style and the roofing and the facade, which is geometrical changes that were nice, but again, it's not addressing the concern that we actually had. The next point here is under B2, the proposal will mitigate the differences in appearance or scale. So like I said, in that control group, the neighbors requested separate buildings and were denied that. The neighbors requested a mix of single and multi-level, like Bridge Meadows. They have two-story, one-story, two-story, that kind of situation. We were denied that. Neighbors requested moving the parking lot to the alleyway side so as not to interfere with neighbor livability. The parking lot's currently directly next to somebody's home when it could very easily it could very easily be moved to the alleyway side. And if it's on the alleyway side, it can have access to the alleyway as a roadway, and it won't be bothering somebody's home. And the only, when I was in the focus group, the only thing they brought up to not move that parking lot was because they might have to move a light pole. And I believe that a person's livability is more important than a few thousand dollars to move a light pole. Correct me if I'm wrong on that. But I do believe that Cliff, who's the neighbor there, his livability is more important than that. And I think it would be an easy reconstruction to move the parking lot to a different location. The next I have here is under C1, which goes into livability. I could have segued that better. The proposal will not have significant adverse impacts on the livability of nearby residential zoned lands. And specifically, I want to talk about noise, glare from the lights, late night operations, that sort of thing. So, and now you've already brought up the good neighbor agreement, and I was also confused on the language. The good faith explanation makes a little bit more sense now. I wasn't really certain what that meant, what kind of documentation that would be. And you did note that it said met in good faith as opposed to. As I understand from the Portsmouth Neighborhood Association, we are definitely willing to meet on a good neighbor agreement. And to give a little background about that, which I believe has been addressed in this, Bridge Meadows also chose to go into a good neighbor agreement with the Portsmouth Neighborhood Association. And we think that although I know they're trying to soften the language so that people don't sandbag and draw the process out, I think it would be safe to say that it should be required because it's already in place for another one of their facilities. And I don't think that for it to already be in place on one facility and to say on this one, yeah, at least they met, is quite the same thing. I think that since it's the same company, it's easy to say that it should be required in this particular case.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Since you raised the good...
She has a finished commissioner, so she's got her time.
I know, and I have a question that's germane to what she just said. You mentioned the good faith. The mayor will, I'm sure, stop the clock and give you the additional time. You mentioned the good faith agreement. What has been your experience with the good faith agreement at the other location?
You mean meeting in good faith?
The
good neighbor agreement.
Good neighbor agreement.
So the good neighbor agreement that occurred at the other location preceded me being involved. So it happened, I believe, in 2009. And I believe they met and they came to agreement on it. Now, I don't have a copy of that in front of me, and as I understand, Dorinda Schubert was supposed to provide one to Mary Margaret Wheeler Webster, who's the chair of the Portsmouth Neighborhood Association.
I didn't mean it so technically. What I meant, I guess what I'm trying to get at is you have a good neighbor agreement at a related facility, which would shed some light on what's the experience been in interacting with them, because a good neighbor agreement is not just a piece of paper, it's an invitation to a relationship. So would you care to offer a perspective on the relationship between the neighborhood and the existing facility?
My understanding is the existing facility and the Portsmouth Neighborhood Association, now I don't know about specific neighbors, but they've interacted very well. In fact, sometimes we hold our meetings at the community center that they have at Bridge Meadows. So we've gotten along in the past. They've connected in the past. It has not seemed to be a problem.
Thank you.
Yeah. Let me get back to where I was. So just to restate, I do think that it should be required, especially because so many neighbors, and this what should be part of the record, there was submitted by another neighbor, Allison McManus, I believe is over 30 signatures of various neighbors saying that they're opposed to this project, they're concerned about this project. And I think to help quell those concerns, a good neighbor agreement should be required, not just meeting in good faith. All right. Oh, and as a note on that, I don't know who exactly wrote it, but they were saying like they would have quiet hours from 9 p.m. to 6 a.m., which is not even consistent with Portland ordinance. It's Portland ordinance is quiet hours from 10 p.m. to 7 a.m. So again, this is part of the reason I think it should maybe be required, because we need to at least follow the law as well as making a good neighbor agreement. So I'd want those things clarified in that good neighbor agreement. As a reason we think that this should also be a requirement, this isn't just a facility with some parents and some children and, you know, that kind of thing. This is specifically 18 to 24-year-olds. This is a specific age range, and they're all people who have a specific background, being foster youth. And so our concerns are a little higher because it's a younger crowd we're looking at. And we, as most of us know, there could be an increased level of noise and late-night activities associated with those residents, and especially when they're concentrated in a specific area. Because it's more like a dormitory on a college campus, which will have house rules. That's why, again, why I think the good neighbor agreement is a little bit more necessary in this case than it would be in other cases. Moving on to D2, which is about the transportation. Is the transportation system capable of supporting the proposal in addition to the existing uses in the area, on-street parking impacts, neighborhood impacts? Now, again, I don't know if this is standard practice, but the only evaluation done was was the traffic consultant hired by the applicant who did a study on a single day. And coming from a scientific background, generally you don't take one experiment and create a fact out of that. You would go multiple times, and they believe they went late at night in January or December. So this is concerning because we contend that the applicant cannot be relied upon or considered when determining if the condition has been met. So basically, I would think that the PBOT would do their own study to make sure that there's no impact. So you have to remember, there's a community center on Foss, which is parallel, and there's also right down Dana Rosa Park. So there's already increased traffic because of people attending these places. There's been claims that maybe the people in this particular building will not have cars, but that doesn't mean their guests won't have cars. There's somebody that their job is going to be to go there, the person who's a LCSW, I believe. So I do think that that needs to be looked at once more because many, many, many neighbors have concerns about parking impacts and traffic impacts in that area.
You've used your time, so we're going to dive into a couple questions if you can. One is, did you raise this issue about the location of the parking lot not being on the alley during the earlier hearing? I was looking for that in the response, and I didn't see what the hearings officer's response was to that.
They believed that the concrete wall was sufficient. So what they decided to do is build a concrete wall between Cliff's property and the proposal.
All right. Well, I have a different concern, which is if we have alleys, we ought to be using them, but that's perhaps not germane to this hearing. Okay, other questions?
What was the alternative that you proposed or anyone's proposed about where the parking should go? Because it seems to me if you put it at the other end of the property, you also have the challenge of putting parking on a intersection in a corner, and our zoning code encourages putting buildings, not parking at the street level like that. So was there an alternative proposal at some point that the neighborhood put forward about where the parking should be?
I believe we've said that the parking should be on the alleyway side. Now, if you picture the corner, the property is like this. They're proposing it's right here. Like, this is the actual corner. Here's a road. Here's a road. And I'm just saying it should go right here. It'd basically be in the same place, but just on the opposite corner, and it would be adjacent to an alleyway rather than someone's home. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's shown in the diagram, too. Yeah. Okay, other questions?
Did you have other issues that you didn't get to in your prepared remarks?
Just about the adjustment. I think the whole purpose of an adjustment is the whole purpose of that law is to prevent a concentration of group living uses in a residential neighborhood, right? That is kind of the purpose. So to trump that purpose with just another building owned by the same company seems frivolous. They have plenty of other places they could be building this, and it would still serve the same function. So basically that would be the reason that we think the adjustment shouldn't be granted. But we also are saying that the conditional use should not be granted.
Can I just ask you a philosophical question? Let's say that instead of this use, a developer came in and put, how many houses would fit here, you know?
They're claiming six.
Yeah.
And let's say that someone came in and built six homes, and each property owner decided to bring two foster children in for a total of 12. What would be the different impact on the neighborhood?
It would be different because those would be separate homes. It would be consistent with what looks the character of the neighborhood, right, which is part of the conditions, is a building that's consistent with what the neighborhood already looks like. We have individual homes. Most of the homes are under 1,000 square feet. The proposal, I think, is several thousand square feet, so it would be noticeably different than the character of the neighborhood. And while we do have modern buildings and less modern buildings, 1975, 1920 built houses, it would still be consistent with a neighborhood feel rather than a group living feel. Does that make sense?
Other questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Take supporters of the appeal, individual supporters of the appeal.
I have two people, Dylan Cruz and Allison McManus.
Come on up, please. Welcome. Good afternoon.
Thank you very much. Hello. Hello. My name is Dylan Cruz. I'm a resident at 8811 North Dana Avenue, for the record. Thanks for the opportunity to be here today. I know that we'll have some conversations after this about the organizations, Bridge Meadows, New Meadows, the tenants, the type of program that's being implemented, the need for these services within our community and the city. No one's disputing those. I'm certainly not disputing those needs or those purposes. This is a social program. It's a group living facility. These are things that we need to do. No one's trying to stop those purposes. What we are trying to talk about today is the design of the facility. I have been involved in the focus group, and I've been working on this project as well as with the developers since the beginning. And what we are simply asking and have asked for from the beginning gets to Commissioner Fish, your question, your philosophical question. We want houses. We want individual buildings. We want this facility to be broken up instead of having an apartment complex on an area zoned for residential houses in a community with small single-family homes in our neighborhood. Building houses, breaking up this facility into smaller units, does a number of things. One, it still allows them to administer their program on that same site. Two, to that point about how many buildings we could build there, they can still house the same number of tenants. 4 four-bedroom houses, 5 three-bedroom, 6 three-bedroom, there's multiple options, but they can still house the same number of tenants on the property. And if they do that, they can maintain the existing R5 designation and respect the wishes of the homeowners, the individuals, and the tenants who have been opposing this project and asking questions about why it has been designed the way it has. It's a win-win for everyone. We think it's a reasonable compromise. It also provides a contingency option. Things change. The uses of a facility changes. It's being managed by a nonprofit. It's contingent on funding in the long run. If we're building a very unique group living facility with a very specific purpose and 4, 5, 6 years down the line, things change in those circumstances as far as their funding and administration changes, we have a problem on our hands at the neighborhood. But if it's individual buildings or homes, we can sell off those assets and do something different with the site. The other thing I want to add is that this is not an isolated complaint. I mean, we're here today. We've taken time off for work to come here. But we do have a petition from 29 homeowners and individuals in the immediately adjacent area that are affected by this that have opposed and objected to a number of the criteria. You have multiple letters from homeowners in the affected neighborhood, and you also have the appeal from the Portsmouth Neighborhood Association. So this is not one grumpy neighbor. This is a large group of neighbors, the neighborhood, who are asking serious questions and coming forward with some alternative proposals. And the last comment that I want to make, and I think it follows up on our last discussion, is thinking about development, thinking about equity in the city. That matters to us. I've been involved in the focus group since the beginning, and we have been repeatedly told that we need to make this work. It needs to meet the needs of the developer. We have to compromise on this. We have to do what they need to do so they can implement their project. But for those of us that live in the neighborhood, those of us that have bought homes there, those of us who are looking to move there, it's important that we're maintaining that single-family home status. And so we think there's a reasonable, balanced compromise that is equitable for everyone involved that lets New Meadows do what they want to do with the same number of tenants and respects the wishes and the desires of homeowners. And we have that compromise and proposal in front of you now. We appreciate your consideration.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Hi, my name is Allison McManus. I'll try not to say too many things that have already been said. So I'm an owner of one of the 1,000 square foot homes on the street. I have a 5,000 square foot lot. So small home, big lot, that's kind of the gist of what our neighborhood looks like. I also don't oppose the New Meadows program. I oppose the building scale and size and the impact it may have on the quality of life of some of my neighbors. In my neighborhood, we already have a group living facility within 200 feet of the proposal, so they need an adjustment. Usually it's a 600-foot minimum. Part of the Bridge Meadows conditional use, it was recognized that their group living facility portion of their project is different than the internal neighborhood on North Hunt. They actually built only homes, triplexes and duplexes in the inner part of the neighborhood, and they left their group living facility on North Willis, which is a major thoroughfare, over 1,000 feet wide and a two-lane connector. In this case, we've asked multiple times that those same criteria of what really is considered compatible with the inner neighborhood is looked at in this case as well. Like we've talked about, there's multiple buildings that could go onto this property and still house the same number of tenants. So I just don't really understand why we're not looking at the same kind of compatible uses for this conditional use and this adjustment than we did several years ago with the Bridge Meadows conditional use. I really think we have an opportunity to find compromise between the homeowners and the New Meadows people on this project by scaling down the buildings or looking at a multiple building design. We continue to debate what the definition of compatible is and if the New Meadows facility, as proposed, is compatible with the neighborhood. Some of the definitions of compatible are being able to exist without conflict or designed to work with another system without modification. We're here today talking about this, so clearly there's still a conflict happening, and we're talking about what adjustments need to take place so that this can happen as proposed. So we're asking for a modification as well. I mean, clearly we're not meeting the definition of compatible at this point. I think we have the opportunity to. In my opinion, this isn't an all or nothing issue. I think there's room for compromise between the New Meadows group and the local homeowners. And overall, I think compromise will be the best solution and have the best long-term effect on the success of this project and the future of our neighborhood. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both. Questions? Thank you. Any other supporters of the appeal? Okay, so then let's move, please, to the applicant opposing the appeal.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor, commissioners. For the record, my name is Sarah Stoffer Curtis, and I'll warn you, I'm a land use lawyer with Stoll Reeves Law Firm. Appearing today on behalf of the applicant, Bridge Meadows. I'm going to let the other members of the team do most of the speaking about this project and the work the applicant has done to work with the Neighborhood Association and carefully consider feedback from neighbors and others. But I did want to respond just briefly to one point about the nature of this proposed use and the spacing between these two group living uses. The nature of the use and the spacing is precisely why we are before you today, and the applicant is seeking conditional use and adjustment approval. If the proposed use was a household living use and we were talking about individual houses here, the use would be allowed outright and there would be no land use process required. What we have recognized as a community, however, is that there are times when we need our land use standards to be somewhat flexible, enough to allow for well-designed proposals that are not allowed outright within a particular zone. In those instances, the city opposes additional standards to make sure that there will not be significant impacts on the neighborhood and the surrounding community. That is precisely what has occurred here. The city has applied its standards and found that they have been met. And for that reason, we ask that you deny the appeal and affirm the hearing officer's approval. With that, I'm going to let the other team members address the specifics of the proposal.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Sean Sub. I'm the executive director at New Avenues for Youth. And forgive me, I'm going to speak very quickly because we have limited time. First, I want to thank the mayor and the city council for the opportunity to respond to this appeal and share more about the proposed New Meadows project. Many of you are familiar with New Avenues and know the work that we do with homeless youth in the Portland community, including over the past 20 years, operating a number of different highly effective housing programs. Some of you also know about our organization's commitment to preventing youth homelessness through our work with youth transitioning out of foster care. New Avenues is currently one of the main providers for life skill transition services for foster care youth in the state. We began doing this work because we recognized a strong relationship between kids aging out of foster care and those becoming long-term homeless youth. This is especially true of those in foster care who become teen parents and lack broader family and community support systems. I know this council understands and appreciates the impact of homelessness and the impact homelessness is having on our community and the need now, more than ever, to come up with creative and collaborative solutions. For the past 3 years, New Avenues and Bridge Meadows have worked together to develop the New Meadows Project to address significant gap and need in our community. The New Meadows Project responds to the displacement in North Portland of youth from communities of color and youth coming from some of our community's most impoverished families. The project leverages the strengths of our two organizations, creating wraparound services, providing opportunities for foster youth to learn and practice skills, and the chance to have long-term, meaningful relationships with adults. You'll further hear from our team about the intentionality and the neighborhood consideration we put into the design, how the design is focused on developmentally what these young people need most to be successful, and how we plan to and are working with the North Portland community to help these young people have successful transition to adulthood.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales and council members. I am Dorinda Schubert, executive director of Bridge Meadows. And as my colleague Sean has said, we have worked diligently between our boards and our leadership staff to come together and leverage our collective strength and our expertise. For the last 5 years, as you know, Bridge Meadows has helped foster youth by providing them with forever families, supporting their adoptive families so that they are strong and thrive, and providing meaning and purpose to elders as they serve as surrogate grandparents and mentors to the kids. In the 5 years that we've opened Bridge Meadows, and thereby our city of Portland, has received national recognition and awards for this innovation. New Avenues for Youth has also received recognition for their innovation. The youth of New Meadows will have high-quality housing built by the Home Builders Foundation, led by Renaissance Homes, and designed by Carlton Hart Architecture. A resident advisor will live on-site with the youth, providing real-time support. The youth will have access to academic, vocational, and health services through New Avenues high-quality programming, and additionally, there will be a significant amount of intergenerational community support to these youth, providing them with that last leg of important support, family. The proximity of New Meadows to Bridge Meadows is a critical factor in creating those lifelong bonds and relationships. It has always been Bridge Meadows' intention to be a good neighbor. Each week, elders from the surrounding community attend Tai Chi, and neighborhood children play at Bridge Meadows just like any other neighborhood kids. We do have a good neighborhood agreement. We developed that several years ago, and I did provide that to the current president because she could not find it. Until recently, the Portsmouth Neighborhood Association meetings have been held at Bridge Meadows for well over 2 years, which allowed our elders easy access to those meetings. In addition to the Bridge Meadows and New Avenues for Youth leadership staff and our board of directors, the community members at Bridge Meadows cannot wait to welcome these youth home and provide them with the support that they need to live successful lives. Thank you.
Could you just hold up for a minute? Sure. Were both of your points made to the hearings officer? Because I don't see any reference to them in the findings.
Exactly which points, Commissioner?
Well, the
Fritz?
Points about the wraparound services and the proximity to
Dorinda was traveling during the hearing, but I presented all of those points as part of my testimony to the hearings officer.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Brian Carlton. I'm with Carlton Hart Architecture and have been very proud to be associated with this project. I've got a presentation that unfortunately I can't get below 15 minutes and I only have 9 minutes left, so I'm going to dance around a little bit for your sake as well, because a lot of what I had to say you've seen up on the screen and have heard as well. I do want to take you through a little bit of the process we've gone through though, and hopefully address some of the comments that have been made by our neighbors in their appeal. This is the original design that we first worked on. It was designed, it is designed as a single building. It was designed to be modern, appealing to the young adults that we would be inviting here to live, and really wanted to have that energy and that appeal to young adults. More importantly, I wanted to point to the floor plan that we're showing here, which is a single building, and it's a collection of studio and one-bedroom efficiency apartments, very small apartments, with a community space, collective space, that provides a central kitchen, dining, living room that gives us a lot of opportunity for community development amongst the youth. And also one of our apartments is for a resident resident manager to live here full-time. It's really important in this design, and I'm going to go ahead and read just to keep myself on focus here. It's critical to the program of New Meadows that the residential setting encourage regular contact between the residents and with their resident assistant. The shared lounge, kitchen, dining, and counseling spaces encourage communication and relationship building. Internal front doors along the corridor allow the resident assistant to watch over his or her flock and keep an eye on the residents and identify people who need encouragement or assistance along the way. So this concept of a single building is really critical to the mission and to the program. And the idea that we're bringing people who might be subject to a tendency towards isolation, and we're really trying to bring them into a community setting where they can mutually support each other and get that assistance from the resident assistant. We've heard loud and clear, and I'm going to quickly transition to this was the design that we presented to the Neighborhood Association, and this is some of the feedback that we got. And we heard loud and clear the desire for single-family homes. It's come up in every discussion we've had. We've acknowledged that along the way. And quite honestly, we have tried to explain our position at every meeting that we've had, where it's just absolutely critical to the program that these young adults are living in close proximity to each other, and whether you call it supervision or guidance, where that resident assistant really has that constant contact with these folks and is really helping them develop their life skills and launch them into adulthood. The idea of breaking them up into separate homes, while that works for certain groups of people and certain people with upbringings that allow for that type of socialization, we've been very clear that we're working with kids who don't have that background, who don't have those skills, those socialization skills, and we really need them in close proximity to each other to really make this work. So we have continued to show the single building concept. This is a quick rundown, a lot of what you've heard already today, of some of the concerns the neighbors expressed beyond that in terms of scale, size, also setbacks and more front yard appearances, that type of thing. And we have talked about the parking. I'll come to that here in a bit. So this is the revised plan that has taken that single building and really worked hard to break it into smaller, more home-like components. We used inspiration from the neighborhood and some of the newer infill development in terms of the proportions we used. We've created these notches in the building and single-story elements to try to create the massing and scale of single-family homes. This gives you a description of how we've created notches in the building and tried to set the massing up to be more reflective of what's being built in the neighborhood. This slide demonstrates that those notches in the building actually were set to reflect the typical spacing in some of the infill development that's happening, skinny homes and infill homes, the distance between those homes within the neighborhood. The photos that you're seeing are all taken from the neighborhood. The site, we've increased landscape areas and setbacks to create more front yard space and introduced some additional landscape features to try to soften that and create that front yard. We also did agree to introduce the CMU wall along our northern property line as well as a cedar fence along the alley to provide more buffer. If I could take an opportunity to address the parking issue, we did look at multiple schemes to try to look at how we could potentially relocate that parking. We did look at parking along the alley. We were told by PBOT that in order to use the alley, it wasn't a matter of just relocating a light pole as well as several underground electrical facilities. We'd have to fully pave the alley. We'd have to introduce stormwater treatment facilities to the alley. The budget for that was quickly getting into the six-figure range. So it's not a simple fix to just park along the alley, given PBOT requirements to improve that alley.
Don't you have the same stormwater requirements for the parking lot to the north?
Yes, but it's a much more consolidated lot that is much more contained. We'd have to take that alley, develop a 20-foot wide street, and add all of the facilities for that.
If the city's requirements were more reasonable, if, for example, we allowed you to use pavers and sand in an alley that's now dirt and access a parking lot from an alley that once again becomes functional as an alley, would that make this more practicable? Instead of requiring you to build a 20-foot street where none such exists and where the rest of the alley is not that and isn't likely to be, I'm frustrated with our own bureau, as you can tell by my tone of voice. We either have alleys or we don't. We have them. We ought to figure out how to use them. This isn't just your problem, but I'm just trying to figure out why we're not letting applicants solve this problem instead of walk away from it.
I don't have a simple answer to that. There are always unintended consequences, and every time we try to use alternative paving or modular paving, it ends up costing more for some reason, and we can all sit here and break that down. It's not an easy answer. I think programmatically, and I'm going to feel the daggers from behind me from my staff who have reinvented this project several times over, programmatically, it does some nice things for us if we're parking off the alley, and we believe we could potentially rearrange the site to make that work. It truly is cost prohibitive at this point for what we know.
Okay, thank you. Okay. I'm sorry, and we interrupted you. You wanted to ask other points you want to make. Sorry, go ahead.
In terms of compatibility, we we really did try, and we do believe we are